Lampa that you would want to pose your questions to. Let me welcome firstly the Minister, Minister Mpatla, who is the Chair of the Economic Cluster and Minister of Trade and Industry, who is also accompanied by Deputy Minister Davis from the far left, from my far left, together with Deputy Minister Tabete, and the DG Madonna, who is sitting on the side today. But it's also available to answer your questions, as you all know. We'll follow the normal format, so we'll have the minister to make a presentation, and on the basis of that, we'll take questions both in Cape Town and Pretoria. Thank you very much, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the media. Fair opportunity, of course, to give a report on the work of the economic cluster. But it's important to actually explain that this report is not a report on the entirety of the work of the economic cluster, but it's a report on what we presented to the cabinet Lekgotla this year. And to perhaps understand that, the approach that was taken to the cabinet Lekgotla this year was slightly different, or rather this time around was slightly different from previous Lekgotla. Firstly, clusters were each requested to report on the apex priorities. Now, you would know that there are 24 apex priorities that were decided on by cabinet last year. And these apex priorities are spread across the different clusters of the cabinet system. So, we're then requested to provide reports on particular apex priorities. Secondly, the approach this year was to ask each of the clusters to present reports on medium-term strategic issues or policy issues. So these were the two essentially defining elements of the cabinet Lekgotla this July. And so regarding the apex priorities that fall under the cluster, and the particular priorities we were asked to report on were the implementation of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, also a report on the Land and Agrarian Reform Program under the Department of Land Affairs and Agriculture, to also report on the National Energy Emergency Response Plan, which is coordinated by the Department of Minerals and Energy, and also to report on the Information and Communication Technology Interventions, which are coordinated by the Department of Communications. Now, you will realize from this that this is also not the entirety of the apex priorities of the economic cluster. There are about seven in total apex priorities in this cluster, but for this Lekgotla, we just reported on each four that I've just outlined. On the medium-term strategic issues, we presented the revised National Human Resource Development Strategy, which is coordinated by the Department of Education and Labor. We also reported on the framework for economic regulators, which is led by the presidency, and also the long-term mitigation scenarios on climate change, which is work that is coordinated by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Now, we will recall that the industrial policy framework was adopted by cabinet in the January Lekgotla last year. And in July, the industrial policy action plan was adopted. So in a sense, the report that we were providing to Lekgotla was a report of 1 year of implementation of the National Policy Action Plan. And if perhaps we do need to do this, to remind that the National Policy Action Plan really had three components to it. Sectoral work or sectoral actions, and within those sectoral actions you had four clearly identified lead sectors, which really represented sectors where we have done the most comprehensive work. The economic analysis, the research, all of the work that we needed to do, the potential impact of those sectors on the rest of the economy. So those are the four lead sectors. But we also identified a range of other sectoral work that we needed to do. Part of it was the clothing and textile sector, to stabilize that sector, to preserve capabilities and employment, recognizing that clothing and textiles, even as it faces difficulties, is still a sector that employs quite a lot of people. Also, we helped the sector that had been identified in the Accelerated and Shared Growth Initiative, ASGISA, Tourism Business Process Outsourcing and Biofuels. And of course, we had identified other sectors where we needed to do more sector and strategy development. So agriculture and agro-processing would be in that category. Minerals beneficiation would be in that category. Cultural industries would be in that category. So there's the sectoral work, which is the one aspect of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. The second category is the cross-cutting actions, which we identified in the plan. And these deal really with industrial financing and industrial upgrading, as well as the issues of reducing input costs through competition policy and trade policy, focusing on the review of the import duties. And the third element of this work is improvement in government organization and capacity. And I think that this issue is one of the issues that we reflected on quite a bit with the experience of implementing this plan. One of the most important, I think, lessons that we have learned, not that we didn't recognize this as we launched the Industrial Policy Action Plan. We recognized this even as we developed the Industrial Policy Framework, as well as the Action Plan, that your success really lies, you know, among other things, on your ability to coordinate, ability to get different parts of the governmental system to work together towards the same goal. And I think that there are various examples that will point to that indicate this. So, if perhaps I could also just on this issue of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, what we adopted last year, and you know, the work that we launched on industrial policy and industrial development last year, really was work that was focused on what we call low-hanging fruits. You know, these are sectors that we have existing capacities and capabilities in, and it was more about expanding the frontier or pushing the frontiers of those sectors. And so in industrial policy speak, in terms of some of the people that do a lot of writing on industrial policy, that's what they would call industrial policy in the small. And part of you know, what we took to the cabinet of Lokota was a slight shift in approach, which is really to shift more towards the more strategic and purposive interventions focused on influencing the structure of the economy. That's industrial policy in the big. These things, they go together. And so that shift would really be looking at scaling up our industrial interventions, focusing a lot more on labor intensive and value-adding activities, addressing the negative trade balance, because to be able to address that really means that our capacity, for example, to export, as well as our capacity to minimize what we have to import in order to support, for example, our infrastructure investment programs. It's those abilities that we need to develop as we move towards your more strategic and larger interventions in terms of industrial development. And of course, significantly strengthening the capacity to implement industrial policy. An example is interventions in the automotive sector, which is the largest manufacturing sector, which has been successfully established and is strengthening its export performance in terms of strategies. Let me now come to the various aspects of the work in the sectors. On automotive, you know that we identified this as one of the lead sectors, and we saw potential for even a greater contribution to GDP, greater contribution to job creation, and a greater contribution to exports in the automotive sector, but also importantly to deepen the manufacturing component, local manufacture of components, and to increase the contribution of locally manufactured components in vehicles that are produced in South Africa. And we had, in December last year, issued a statement that outlined the broad architecture of the new or replacement scheme for the Motor Industry Development Program. This is where that we indicated then that to really complete the detailed work on the rules and the nitty-gritties of that program, we needed the period up to August this year. And that work has, of course, been going on, and we reported to the Cabinet of Hulka that we are on track, actually, to complete this work as we had indicated that we would complete this work by August. And so the draft new industry support program has been completed, and we are now in the final stages of consultation. We are involved currently in very intense consultations with the sector, the stakeholders in the sector, but we are also intensely engaged within government, between ourselves and Treasury, for example, but we will also be going to cabinet with the final product. So that is really the stage where we are, and we intend to take this to cabinet during this month of August. And I think that just broadly on the automotive sector, we continue to remain confident on our ability as a country to attract or sustain the trend of increased investment that we've seen. I think this year already we have seen some important announcements by the companies to expand their facilities in South Africa, and these are things that keep us confident that we will realize the objectives that we set ourselves for the automotive sector. On the chemicals, plastics and pharmaceuticals, you would also recall that we did a launch of the Netlink agreed sector summit on chemicals, and so there is an agreed program by the stakeholders in Netlink which is currently under implementation in the chemicals. And of course, you will also recall that when we made the announcement about the chemicals, plastics and pharmaceuticals sector as a broad category, within that we had the ARV tender as one of the things that we saw as providing an opportunity to enhance our capability to manufacture the drugs in South Africa. And there has been a tender process that has been underway, and I think that it is in the finalization stages. Has it been announced by health? It says. Yeah, and our own experience, you know, this is one of the examples of this coordination issue in government, because this is a tender that was run by the Department of Health to the extent that ARV drugs were being procured by health. But you know that supply chain management or procurement in terms of the constitution and the law is managed by the Treasury. But of course, the industrial policy aspect of this is work that is led by the Department of Trade and Industry. And it was, I think, one experience in coordinated work towards the achievement of the same goals. And I think the important thing about this is that you have these three different departments. Treasury will obviously be concerned about issues of value for money, among other things. And health will be concerned about ensuring that the procurement is done within a manageable budget, because these procurements are actually paid for by provinces. And DVI would be having the industrial policy interest in this. And so it was quite an experience to actually work in a sector that is prioritized as a lead sector in terms of industrial policy, and to ensure that we work together collectively towards achieving all of these, I don't want to say competing objectives, but all of these objectives that are pursued, you know, by the different departments. I think that it was an experience, I think, worth drawing lessons from going forward. I think we were able to work together, but I must say that it was quite challenging to ensure that we put all of these objectives on the table and advance them. On the matter of fabrication, capital goods and transport equipment, we have, of course, anchored this on existing capabilities that we have in the economy, but also on the fact that we are currently involved in large-scale infrastructure investment projects as government. And so an important element of this would be the competitive supply development plans by Transnet and Eskom, which are, I think, the largest spending will actually come from those two entities. And so those competitive supplier development plans have been developed by Transnet and Eskom. And I think this is, again, you know, one example of this coordination in government to ensure that we all commit to and work towards achievement of the priorities that we've agreed upon. Another important aspect of this work is our ability to promote or support tooling, because this is an important element of the work in the capital goods and metals fabrication area. And so we have we've launched the National Tooling Initiative, I think, Rob, it was in March this year. But also, another important element of this is the foundry work, which is also an important support work for developing the capital goods industry. We have also launched the National Foundry Technology Network in July, if I'm correct. And I think the challenge with regard to both of these initiatives is that we should now actually scale up these initiatives. In other words, we've got to increase the funding that is available for the National Tooling Initiative and the National Foundry Technology Network. The tariff review on various sectors, aluminium being one of them, chemicals being another, clothing and textiles with a greater focus on textiles. All of those reviews on tariffs have been initiated, and the work will be completed later this year. We've also started a program to maximize industrial development benefits from the rail fleet acquisition program by the Department of Transport and the South African Rail Commuter Corporation. So that work has been initiated. On forestry, paper pulp and furniture, largely the work so far has been focused on the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, really where we saw the potential to create a lot of rural employment through afforestation, which is planting of new forests. And so the land issues that are attached to that, the water issues that are attached to that, these are the things that we have been dealing with, and we have been able with the Department of Water Affairs to resolve the water related issues through an agreement for general authorization for afforestation in areas that are not water stressed. But we are exploring new initiatives in Mpumalanga and Limpopo in this area. Mpumalanga, I know, has done quite a lot of work in terms of the forestry and furniture development work. So, two new provinces, and if you notice, all of these are rural provinces, because this is a sector that we identified on the basis that it also has the potential to assist us in terms of dealing with some of the rural challenges of the unemployment. There are also furniture initiatives that are located in different provinces, Western Cape, Eastern Cape. That work is also proceeding to do those furniture incubators. On clothing and textiles, we have completed the structure of the program that will assist us to address the different challenges in the clothing and textile sector. We have come up with a clothing, textiles, and textiles competitiveness program to replace the duty credit certificate scheme, which is a scheme that has been in existence for quite a long time, but which did not quite help us to achieve the objectives that were intended. But there were also issues around whether the scheme itself was compatible with the provisions of the World Trade Organization. And so we have developed this clothing and textile competitiveness program, whose focus will be on capital and technology upgrading, as well as firm and cluster competitiveness upgrading. With this, we also will be looking at the IDC having a special facility, a concessional loan facility, to support industrial upgrading in the clothing and textile sector. We are also going to be doing work to scale skills in conjunction with the clothing, textiles, footwear, and leather feeder, so that we can also address the skills challenges in the area. But also, one of the challenges in the area of clothing and textiles is the illegal imports as well as under invoicing. So the establishment of an interdepartmental illegal imports task team to tackle these issues of smuggling and under invoicing has been established, which involves the South African Revenue Service as well. We are making very good progress on the AFISA sectors, on BPO and tourism. We have had the rollout of the business process outsourcing incentive scheme, and we have had a good take-up in that area with some of the projects that have already been approved, giving us just under 10,000 jobs, and there are additional applications that have been approved. So the take-up is quite good. Our work readiness program, which is the mass skills program, in order to produce the skills that are needed on a mass scale, that program has got off to a good start. The initial 1,000 trainees have all been absorbed into work, and we'll be training an additional 2,000 during the course of this year. And what you must understand from this is that the just under 10,000 jobs that we have been able to secure from the seven or so applications that have been approved, these are over a three-year period. So these are jobs that will roll out over a three-year period. So our training program has also got off to a good start. The work also on establishing call centers in your more far-flung areas has also got off to quite a good start. I think that in the Northern Cape, in the Eastern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, I forget what other province, but we have been able to establish. Free State is another one that is there, that recently also has registered success in terms of establishing these call centers in certain outside your major metropolitan areas. This is work that we believe will continue. We have the confidence that there will be increasing take up on the establishment of these facilities in your more far-flung areas. We have brought municipalities to, we've profiled about 22 municipalities. For purposes of this. The work on tourism is also work that is going on quite well. Just to give you some of the information that relates to some of these call centers that have been established in other areas. In the Free State, under the Manwaum Council, the company has agreed to establish a 600-seat center, but which is being piloted on a smaller scale currently. But also, call centers are being established in Polokwane and Klerksdorp. We also had a very successful policy conference on BPO in Durban on the 10th and 11th of July this year, which really essentially was a review of the experience that we've had. And the interest, you know, remains very high on business process outsourcing, both domestically as well as internationally. On the tourism, which I was just starting on, there are various aspects to this work. There is a tourism enterprise. Work that we are doing. There is tourism grading of facilities. We have had about 6,385 accommodation establishments that have been graded. There's also work that is being done to address skills in this area. So the placement, for example, of 500 tourism graduates during this financial year in Florida at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel is just one of the initiatives, but work also on improving service, the quality of service through the South African Service Quality Institute. So there's a range of initiatives. The work on promoting tourism is also work that is underway. Information and communication technology interventions. One of the major elements of this work has been the work on digital migration, broadcasting digital migration, which is the migration away from analog signals to digital signals for our televisions. This is part of the work that's being done in readiness for the 2010 World Cup, which we have to broadcast to the whole of the world. And there have been various aspects to this work that needed to be undertaken. One element of that has been the digital broadcasting policy. And this work is work that is also underway. Preparation of physical facilities and infrastructure has been completed. The upgrade of old systems as well as the installation of equipment to ensure that key transmitter stations that are prepared for the installation of the digital terrestrial television transmitters. The second aspect of this work is, this work I've just referred to is in preparation for phase one of this project, which will be aimed at covering 50% of the population in terms of the rollout of the digital broadcasting infrastructure by Sentech. The second aspect of this work is to develop and start implementing the manufacturing of set-top boxes, because for a while we'll be running a dual signal, both analog and digital. And so, for a while, people will need those who still have televisions that cannot support a digital signal. They should be able to get set-top boxes that will enable them to translate the signal. So, this is work that has been under the auspices of the Department of Communications. We are looking at the manufacture of these set-top boxes in South Africa. And so the specifications for these have been submitted to the Bureau of Standards for accreditation. And also, there is a view that has been taken that we will need a support scheme for poorer households to be able to to enable them to access these set-top boxes, and so some sort of subsidy scheme for poor households will be made available, but a cabinet memorandum in this regard decision will be taken by cabinet in this particular regard. A further element of this work is the implementation of the local and digital content development strategy. And this work, you know, is being done based also on a report on international best practice, which has been completed, and there's an interdepartmental task team of the Department of Arts and Culture, Education, and the Department of Trade and Industry that has been established. And the local content development strategy has been completed and will, in due course, be presented. The last aspect of this is information to enhance the awareness strategy, because we're going to need to raise the awareness of South Africans about the implications of this, what this means, and how people should go about. Already the tender process for the development of the strategy has been finalized, and we're in the process of appointing an external service provider to assist the department in rolling out the public awareness campaign. The It is still intended to do the switch on. What is the date of this year? November. November. So we are still on track to switch on that date, and it will run for 3 years. The switch off from analog will be in November 2011. So these are the things that we need to inform the public about. So those are issues that relate to the broadcasting digital migration. But there's other work in the information and communication technology area. You know that there's work that is underway for undersea cables to enhance our broadband capacity. And so we have two cables, initiatives for two cables on the East Coast as well as on the West Coast. What is now known as UhuruNet, which covers the East Coast but crosses over to Nigeria under the auspices of the Department of the Communications. That is one of the cables. Nigeria has agreed to participate in this, and there are discussions with Kenya for it to participate. But there's also the Africa West Coast cable, which is under the auspices of Infraco. So these are the two cable initiatives that are underway. All of them will significantly enhance our broadband capacity. And it must not be forgotten that ultimately we'll be able to reduce our telecommunications costs when we are able to enhance our broadband capacity. But also the availability of broadband also helps us in terms of the number of things that we can do through information and communication technology. Yeah, I think those are the important aspects of the work on let's proceed now to the National Emergency Response Plan. I'm just checking if I'm be leaving anything out on the Information Communications Technology Initiatives. Of course, the work on the rollout of wireless broadband, particularly for your rural areas and our facilities such as schools and clinics, that work is underway. CENTEC has secured the funding, and the priority schools are the Dinaledi schools in terms of the program of the Department of Education. And in terms of current work that is being done, 233 of those schools, work will be undertaken in 233 of those schools. On the National Emergency Response Plan, which has been one of the challenging areas of our work during the course of this year, given the challenges that confronted us at the beginning of the year. We believe that we have been successful in responding to the immediate electricity emergency with the institutional structures in place. And we have developed demand-side interventions, and we are currently implementing those. And so we have been able, on the supply side, to restore a reasonable reserve margin and to reduce the unplanned outages to below 2,500 megawatts, which is a daily target. And you know that what caught us at the beginning of the year was the number of unplanned outages that amounted to a very big amount in terms of megawatts. But also the work of replenishing the depleted stockpiles of Eskom, your coal stockpiles, that replenishment of those stockpiles has been achieved in that we've been able to increase the stockpile. I think from 30 days worth to about just under 20 days worth. And we have had to fast track the work on coal generation, as well as the work to attract independent power producers, and there's a stronger focus on Eskom's build program. On the demand side, the initiatives that have been undertaken on power conservation, and this involves quite a number of things. It involves aggressive energy efficiency in government and state-owned enterprise buildings. And so we've had to get departments and stakeholders to really conserve energy in the sense of ensuring that unnecessary lighting and heating is avoided. And so nighttime lighting, those are some of the things that have changed. We've also had to promote national efficient lighting, as well as to explore alternatives for solar water heating, and as well as to raise consumer awareness in terms of both energy conservation, but also properly communicating around energy challenges. For example, whenever there's going to be load shedding, to properly communicate those issues. So work that is underway at the moment is to develop a framework for large connections, and also on an ongoing basis, the multi-stakeholder task team will continue to function. And so generally, I think the positives from the work that has been done are that we have clear institutional arrangements in place, communication has been improved, some savings targets have been achieved, mainly outside the residential, so we still need to do more on the residential front in terms of energy savings. We've managed to achieve the reduction of maintenance, in other words, to limit unplanned outages to 2,500 megawatts per day. We are achieving municipality buy-in, and there is the stockpile that I referred to, and that has also been improved. There's further work that is being done to improve the regulatory and legislative environment that will ensure that we can lock in some of these gains that we have registered. Some of the challenges, of course, is the fact that the savings targets, you know, are still not locked in, and we need to ensure that we can lock in those savings. We do need to ensure funding for some of the important work, such as the Energy Efficiency Agency. We still need to improve energy savings in the household sector. Yeah, so those are some of the things that still challenge us in this particular regard. And then to proceed to land and agrarian reform, which is another area that we reported on during the cabinet of Khutla. The land and agrarian reform program, which has faced considerable implementation challenges, escalating land prices, inadequate funding, the capacity of targeted beneficiaries, and funding for rehabilitating collapsed agricultural infrastructure. So these really are all of the challenges that have been faced in our land and agrarian reform program. And of course, this is very important work if we are to address the challenges of poverty and rural unemployment. And this is work that is also dispersed between the National Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs and provinces. The important, I think, issue that Cabinet reflected and decided on was the issue around resourcing, the need to ensure that there is adequate resourcing for the land and agrarian reform program. But in addition to that, it is important for one to just indicate some of the work that is going to be undertaken during the course of this year. It is intended that 2.5 million hectares be delivered over the year ending March 2009, with another 2.5 million hectares for the 2009-2010 financial year. And these targets have been disaggregated by province, and the land reform grants have been revised to facilitate land acquisition in the light of increases in land prices, and also to deal with the capacity challenges to implement these programs. The additional posts to the tune of 1,220 that have been created for the required capacity in provinces, because a lot of this work actually has to be done at provincial level. The 10,000 intended beneficiaries will include farm workers, farm dwellers, and cooperatives from emerging farmers. Another aspect of this work is to increase access to services and production by 10 to 15%. And a key element of this is a program called Lezima, which is really to promote farming and the growing of food by people on a wide scale. To promote also small-scale production, but there are also large production systems that are being promoted in Daum and Falhat, irrigation infrastructure, the Sikisiki dryland development, the Eastern Cape Askisa project, which includes development of 400,000 hectares. There's also work to improve access to agricultural capital equipment, and the creation of a one-stop center for all support services, including financing, and to develop support norms and standards for basic services. Again, to increase black entrepreneurs and trade by 10%, that includes the promotion of functional cooperatives in the agricultural sector, promoting the development of agro-processing nearer to the primary production areas, promoting access to markets, as well as review legislation which hampers access to markets and increase the credibility of the South African sanitary and phytosanitary certification. This becomes very important, especially if we are to import to other countries. The challenges, of course, are the ever-escalating land prices, the issues of inadequate funding, capacity of targeted beneficiaries, as well as the funding for rehabilitating collapsed infrastructure. And of course, we continuously have to be aware of the negative impact of climate change on agriculture. So these are the four areas that we reported on. I think the long-term mitigation scenarios on climate change, it is my understanding that there was quite a comprehensive briefing that was done by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism on this. And essentially, really, what the cabinet Lekutla reflected on were the six broad policy direction themes that have been developed to respond to the climate change and greenhouse gas emission challenges. And these include limitations and reductions of greenhouse gas emissions. Secondly, that we build on current initiatives that are already underway, focusing on scaling up energy efficiency and electricity demand side management initiatives and interventions. Implementing a call for action, which is really to ensure that we promote appropriate measures and policies to meet ambitious national targets on renewable energy, to start planning and preparing for the future, which will include the support for new and ambitious research and development targets that are being set, most importantly in the fields of carbon-friendly technologies. Also, to address vulnerability and adaptation issues. And this includes continuous identification, description, and prioritization of our vulnerabilities to climate change. And this will result in development of appropriate adaptation interventions. And also to improve our alignment, coordination, and cooperation, both within the public sector, but I think broadly in society. I know that there are meetings that are being held with the CEOs of the large companies. So that's really the work on the long-term mitigation scenarios. So this is one of the medium-term policy issues that were addressed. On the National Human Resource Development Strategy, the cluster finalized its revision of the Human Resource Development Strategy and is starting on a consultation process with stakeholders. The review did indicate to us that institutional mechanisms are crucial to effective integration, coherence, and coordination of human resource development initiatives. The main challenges in this area include the responsiveness of education and training to the development agenda, skill shortages in priority areas, quality issues in the skill development pipeline, and quality and effectiveness of education and training providers. This is a strategy that is two-pronged. It is both short-term in the sense that it's got a five-year program, which really is to more respond to the more immediate challenges and priorities, but also in the longer term to effect a general improvement in human resource development indicators and overall country competitiveness and skills development initiatives. On the framework for economic regulators, there was a draft that was presented to the cabinet of Lakota, but it was felt by the Lakota that there's more work that needs to be done to improve on the framework. And so this is work that will come back during the course of the normal cycles of the cabinet. And so it's something that we hope to be reporting on in due course. So really, I think the issues to highlight is progress that we are making and we have made in integrating the APEX priorities into the work of the cluster and improving the monitoring of the implementation through our focus groups. Good progress being made in the implementation of the APEX priorities, and there's always the need for us to continue to improve our implementation capacity, our organization and coordination, and where necessary, to ensure that the necessary funding is available for the areas of work that we prioritize. An area, I think, which I left out in reporting on the industrial policy action plan under the cross-cutting actions, and I apologize for that, is the work on industrial financing. We have completed a comprehensive review of industrial financing, and we are now rolling out new support programs. And already we have launched the Enterprise Investment Program, which is the scheme that has replaced the SMEDP, which we suspended sometime in 2007. So we have launched this Enterprise Investment Program on the 3rd of July, and we're open for business to receive applications from the 18th of July. And this is still an incentive scheme that is aimed at supporting small to medium scale manufacturing enterprises with investments of up to 200 million. But it really starts from investments that are even below 5 million. There are particular conditions that apply to investments under 5 million and different scales of support and conditions for investment above 5 million. Earlier this year, we also launched the revised film and TV production rebate scheme. You will recall that when we launched the scheme initially, it was really aimed at attracting your big budget movies from outside the country to come and locate their shooting in South Africa, to do their shooting in South Africa. But we had to respond to a cry by smaller scale filmmakers in South Africa to be able to get access to a scheme such as this one. So we have relaunched the film and TV production rebate scheme. On the tax incentive that was announced by Treasury with the budget this year of an amount of 5 billion rand to support industrial development, we have been doing work on the structure of that tax incentive, and that work is quite advanced. We expect to complete that work during September 2008. Additionally to the cross-cutting actions under industrial policy, you will know that the competition amendment legislation was approved by Cabinet and submitted to Parliament. I think Parliament has almost, if not completed, its review of the competition amendment legislation. And you would also know that this legislation is really aimed at strengthening our ability to intervene, the ability of the competition authority to intervene, but also to introduce some new things into that legislation, such as the personal liability for directors who involve their company in cartel activities, but also to deal with the phenomenon of complex monopolies. So these are aspects of this competition amendment legislation that is currently before Parliament. There's also a comprehensive review of trade policy that has been undertaken to ensure alignment with industrial policy. This is an important area of work for us because we took the view in the industrial policy framework that we have to ensure alignment between trade policy and industrial policy, and that our approach in dealing with tariffs, for example, must be informed also by our industrial policy approach and priorities. And so it means a number of things. In certain instances, it means that because you've got particular objectives in certain sectors, you will remove tariffs, especially those that are of a nuisance character, where you are looking at, among other things, reducing input costs in that particular sector. And it also means that in certain areas where there are difficulties, such as in your clothing, textiles, and footwear, you would rather go slow in terms of reducing or removing tariffs. So really, that's really the issue of alignment and trade policy being informed by industrial policy priorities and challenges. And interestingly, you know, this was one of our areas of focus in the WTO meeting that recently concluded without a result. Our huge concern about the clothing, textile, and footwear sectors in terms of the obligations that we're expected to undertake in non-agricultural market access. Another aspect of the work on cross-cutting actions is really the work on innovation, R&D, and technology. And part of that is the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency under the auspices of the Department of Science and Technology. That is work that is underway with the two departments, Science and Technology and Treasury, finalizing issues really around the establishment of the agency. And so, really, the experiences and implementation challenges, the cross-cutting nature of industrial policy, puts additional requirement on intra-governmental coordination, planning, and leadership. These are some of the lessons that we've already drawn from 1 year of implementation of the action plan. We also need to mainstream industrial policy considerations in large state procurement and the infrastructure rollout. We are still challenged by monopolistic practices that limit competitiveness on downstream industries. And we are looking at scaling up our industrial policy interventions, shifting to a 3-year industrial policy action plan rather than just a 1 year. And this will really ensure that our industrial policy planning is in line with the medium term, is aligned to the medium term strategic framework, but also in line with the budgeting framework. We will, however, continue to have annual programs for industrial development. And we also noted that the environment in which industrial policy interventions are implemented matters, such as the unfavorable shifts in the macroeconomic conditions. So these are just some of the experiences and the implementation challenges on industrial policy. So we will, from, I think, now onwards, have a 3-year rolling industrial policy action plan, which really will make for more medium-term planning and implementation of industrial policy. I think I have covered the areas on which we reported to the cabinet Lekutla. Sorry that I took so long, but I thought it important to provide a bit of detail and just provide a bit more than what is contained in the statements that you have been provided. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister. Shall we proceed to questions based on the document and the briefing that I mentioned? We'll start with Pretoria. Take two questions to respond and then we can follow up on later.
Terence Cream of Engineering News. Just on the MRDP that's going to be announced later this month, if you could talk to the volume thresholds, if those are firm now, or whether those are still being canvassed with the stakeholders. There seems to be some concern about those volume thresholds.
The
volume thresholds for the automotive manufacturers. And just more generically on the industrial financing package, if you can talk to, what is the final makeup? You've got the enterprise investment program now, you're going to have the MRDP, going to have this tax incentive. What is the balance between these sort of generic cross-cutting incentives versus more targeted ones like the MRDP? And what will the annual profile budget of that over the 3-year period look like? And then just lastly, if you could just talk to the big issue of the defense offsets, if you could give us an update on the National Industrial Participation Program for the defense aspect, as well as I see you are going to go for a NIP style approach for the railways, for the rail investment for the SARCC. Given some of the lessons that are coming out from the NIP, why are you not adopting the TSEP approach there?
as fast, so I'm trying to note them. Thank you. On the MIDPs, I mean, I don't want to start reporting on the aspect of it, but we are, you know, at that stage, having produced the product or the draft of the new program, on all aspects of that program. We are in consultations with industry because it is important for us to have a feel of the response of the stakeholders in the industry prior to us going to cabinet, so that at least by the time we go to cabinet, we have a fair sense of the sense, because this has been quite an interactive process with the stakeholders, and so. While the final decisions will be taken by cabinet on this, but we really do want to have a good feel of how the particularly the OEMs are responding to this. So on all aspects of this, we are consulting quite closely with them, and we will be doing so, you know, prior to us going to cabinet. So a lot of that work, I think, involves quite a bit of toing and froing. Because the toing and froing between us and the stakeholders, the OEMs and so on, but there's also the toing and froing between ourselves and Treasury, and so ultimately we will, as we are preparing to present the final product to cabinet. So I would therefore say that all aspects of the program are currently subject of the consultation. And I think based on that consultation, we'll take the final form, which we'll then take to cabinet, in hope that what form we take to cabinet based on those consultations will then be adopted by the cabinet. On the work of industrial financing, really this is work that is unfolding. And I don't think that we are at a stage where we can say we have the complete architecture of industrial finance. We did a comprehensive review of the entirety of the industrial financing schemes that we've had since, I think, about 1996. And drawing lessons from that, we are really trying to come up with a new suite of industrial financing incentives. There are important things, I think, to point to as we do this work. I think that part of the challenge that has been there with industrial financing schemes that we have had in place, you've not had a commonality of understanding, for example, between ourselves as the department that manages and drives these programs, and a national treasury, for example, that has to provide the funding on the design of these financing instruments, and on really what we intend to achieve and what we get for the financing that we make available at the state. And so part of what we did through the industrial policy framework and the work that we indicated in the industrial policy action plan was to say that the funding that we make available has got to be more conditional in terms of the delivery on the things that we identified as important priorities. And so to the extent that we are looking at achieving a variety of objectives, value addition, raising our export performance, employment creation, and so on. Our financing has got to begin to ensure that we don't just provide funding, and yet you can't quite see what we are getting. So this is work that is unfolding, And it is taking different forms. You have your more targeted schemes such as the film and TV rebate scheme, as well as the MITP, and your more generic financing schemes such as the enterprise investment program. An aspect of that enterprise investment program is that it not only supports small and medium scale manufacturing companies with investments of up to 200 million rand, it also is going to be used to support tourism facilities, and with a particular focus on attracting tourism facilities to areas that are outside of your major metropolitan areas that enjoy actually the majority of tourism facilities. So you'll have your more generic scheme like that, which is more suited to small and medium scale enterprises. For your larger types of investments, this kind of incentive scheme wouldn't work best. And that's where your tax incentive type scheme works better for your larger scale incentives, investments. So really, you know, as to the final shape this will take, we, for instance, are still doing the work on designing an industrial upgrading program. And the final makeup, really, of this, I think it's something that will be clearer over time. But at the moment, we are trying to draw the best lessons from the review that we did, or the comprehensive review that we did. Again, what the scale of financing will be, again, that's something that can't quite be clear right now, with this work still unfolding. As it is doing. The question you asked was a bit complex for me because you made some reference to some of the stuff that's been in the newspapers recently, and also you asked the question as to why we were not adopting the CSDP approach in relation to the transport. Yes. Okay. On the we've been doing work as the department of managing the offset program at the Department of Trade and Industry. And I think that's the important point to start, you know, with is that there's a lot of work and a lot of projects that have been done under this offset program. And this is work that has been reported on an annual basis. And so the information is available about all of the work that has been undertaken, the investments that have been achieved, the jobs that have been created, the provinces where we've been able to secure investments. And we'll be doing another annual report. We're actually preparing to do another annual report. And I think that it's important to make reference to that in even reflecting on what was in the newspaper recently. And to say that there's a whole amount of material up there about real investments, real jobs that have been created from the offset program. From my understanding of some of the programs that were reported on in the newspapers, and one needs to get full information on this. My understanding actually is that those projects that have been singled out are projects that face difficulties at a point in time, but as we understand it, these are projects that are actually functional. And so we do not share the view that these are a dead project. But I also say this, even if they were, in the context that there is a large volume of information about projects and investments and achievements under the offset program. But perhaps what would be more important would be for us when we table our next annual report on the offset program to actually do quite a comprehensive briefing on this. I'm quite sure that the information is available that points in the direction of what has been achieved so far with this program. On why the Rail Commuter Corporation is not, I don't know if this or if you have.
Thanks. The competitive development competitive supply development program didn't actually mean to overturn or eliminate the national investment participation program of the PGI. These are programs that will live side by side. In regard to the PSDP, as you know, that's been led by the Department of Public Enterprises. It's exploring a particular approach to what is essentially the same objective, because NEEP seeks to maximize industrial development opportunities that are attached to major procurement and initiatives by government with a threshold of anything from 10 million US dollars will need to be considered under NEEP. DPE, for very complex reasons which I won't go into, says that the scope, I think, to try another approach. Now, of course, this will apply to procurement under the oversight of DPE. We've been approached by the Department of Transport and the RCC to explore cooperation and clearly the opportunity there in regard to the refurbishment of rolling stock in regard to commuter rail. And we're still working on that. It's still fairly early days. But the important thing is that we are working with the DOT and the RCC in regard to that.
So, Rob, would you like to say something on the same?
No, thanks. I think the important point is that the CSDP is an alternative to the NIP. The NIP is the norm, that if you're procuring anything for $10 million or more, then you have to have an approved offset program. And that can be investments in something not related to the procurement itself, but an approved program. Now, the CSDP was put forward as an alternative, and really what it involves is an ongoing relationship between the procuring entity and suppliers, driven by a recognition that actually if you don't develop local suppliers, you're not going to be able to procure those particular inputs as effectively as you would before. So it requires an additional kind of effort on the part of the procuring agencies. And I think that some of them have decided to go that route. If you don't decide to go that route, and that seems to be the choice of the Rail Commuter Corporation, then the NIP applies. I think that's basically the way the process works.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Minister. Further questions? Michael, is that a follow-up?
Michael,
is there any
question?
Okay, let me take one last from Pretoria. I'll come to Cape Town.
Thank you, Boy Bird. Yes, I did. Minister, could you just, on the land reform project that they're planning to reform, so to speak, 5 million hectares over the next 2 years, effectively, how are we going to guarantee that, because of considering the funding problems they have had, are new ideas coming forward with that? And if so, could you explain that? And then could you give us any more detail on the SARS task team planning to investigate underreporting of figures when you're referring, I think, to imports? Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, it may be that on the land reform questions, especially people that were present at the Jahuka might give a better sense of a better feel of the discussion that that took place. But I think that essentially, you know, this is not something that introduces a change in terms of this being a new program. But this is a program that's being given, I think, a new burst of energy based on reflection on what hasn't worked so well. And one of the lessons, I mean, from this is that, you know, the success that you achieve, for instance, with the land restitution program has not necessarily been accompanied by viability once you have given land back to people. Viability once you've settled or resettled people on that land. And so the need to ensure that as you address issues of access to land, you at the same time provide the support mechanisms that will ensure that people settled on that land can, you know, have a basis to start a viable agricultural activity. And I think that in the past perhaps there hasn't been that balanced approach. But having said so, one also has to say that, you know, a few years ago there was the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program that was developed by the Department of Agriculture and actually funded quite well by Treasury. But then the implementation challenges, because a lot of this money actually had to be dispersed to provinces. But there wasn't the requisite capacity to implement at that level. And I think that's what makes it important, you know, the reference I made to additional posts that have been identified at provincial level, 1,220 posts. This is a conscious, active program to address the implementation challenges in relation to this. So really I think it's to give, you know, more focused attention to the implementation issues, to ensure that where funding shortfalls are manifest, they're addressed, but I think that to also set some clearer targets, improving or increasing black entrepreneurs in the sector and trade by 10%, increasing access to a whole range of the services. So that's really what I see as happening here. But those who are in the hood may want to give a feel if you feel it's necessary. But really my sense is giving a fresh.
I think one could suggest that maybe you might want to come along to the press conference after the working group on agriculture this afternoon, where the line department can get more details. But part of this is also they've done some geographic work and identified the best prospects along the east coast the eastern part of the country. So going from the northern part of Mpumalanga, even into Limpopo, down the coast of KwaZulu-Natal and even into the Eastern Cape. And some of that is commercial land, and some of that is actually land which is currently occupied in various ways by family agriculture. And there's a kind of a comprehensive strategy around support programs, acquisition and so on, which is being developed in that regard. I think that was the gist of the new program. And of course that geographic work is also linked to the question of climate change. Those are the areas where rainfall would be most likely to be prevalent in the immediate term.
So this
one
on the casting sun.
I thought that the purpose of the task would be self-evident. It's in the process of being set up. It's in the process of being set up. I can't really say much more than that. It's not really working yet. But the objective of it clearly is to improve custom administration law enforcement at the border to avoid illegal importation and other invoicing, you know, which, by the way, these are things which customs up to so far, you know, haven't really had the capability, the capacity to address these things in the context of trade policy, in the context of industrial policy, as it were. Obviously, at the level of the commissioner, he appreciates the need to ensure that we keep the integrity of our borders, we perform customs and so on. But together, we need to work as a team with the customs people. So I can't say more than that. I wanted to address a question related to, I think you were asking about the budget for incentives. In regard to the enterprise investment program, which the minister spoke to, the current budget to start off the program is 700 million over the next 3 years. Obviously, depending on the response take up, we will review the budget and hopefully request more money from Treasury. The total budget that is available to the DTR in terms of incentives and grants going forward to the next 3 years is 5 billion. Around 5 billion rand. And that excludes the 5 billion tax incentive, which the minister referred to, which is also being finalized.
Sorry, just on the tasking, I think it's worth mentioning that the NEDNAC partners within the framework of the Trade and Industry Chamber of NEDNAC have actually agreed to work together on a task team, not just about clothing and textiles, but more broadly on illegal imports. They've started meeting, getting together, so business, labour, a number of government departments. I think the basic philosophy there is that it's not just SARS that is going to do the work of detecting illegal imports, but that the stakeholders themselves have got information and so on, which they can bring to bear in the party, and also resources that they can bring to bear. I think the whole intention is that there will be a much more serious effort now to detect illegal imports, which are a serious threat in a number of industries, not only clothing and textiles, but perhaps most prominently there.
Okay, give down Michael Hamlin.
Hi, Michael Hamlin, iNet Bridge. We were promised last Thursday at the cabinet briefing that you would tell us about the Southern African Development Community Free Trade Area, which was apparently discussed at Cabinet and approved. And I wondered whether you had some details on that you can flesh out that fair announcement we had.
Okay, Michael, before the Minister responds, that's a separate briefing that we'll try to organize to deal specifically with the FTA. Specifically, just to be on the FTA, this is just the one that deals with the outcomes of the Lokota. Unfortunately, we have not pinned it down for today, but we'll make sure that it happens through early this week.
Okay, point taken.
Yes, I mean on this issue of the free trade area. Obviously, you know, this is free trade area that is going to be launched by the SADC summit, and so the heads of state are going to do the launch, and I think at an appropriate time when that has happened, we would then provide the kind of information which the SADC secretariat has put together. The important thing, you know, I can say is that indeed we will be launching the free trade area during the course of this SADC summit. I can also say that one of the elements of that work is the information that will be made available in terms of what this free trade area is going to mean to entrepreneurs, to exporters, to importers. There will be a set of information that will be made available, but those are things that are being done by the SADC secretariat. So I think as and when the moment is appropriate, we will also be doing briefings on that. I know that in terms of this briefing that you were referring to, some work had already been prepared. Rob was going to, I think, provide some statistics about South Africa's static trade, something that gives a feel of the kind of trade that is happening between South Africa and the rest of the static members. And that information will still be made available, but I think at an appropriate time.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Linda Enzel from Business Day. Minister, on the question of South Africa's trade policy in the light of the Doha talks collapse, perhaps you could update us on where to now in terms of the priorities and progress of South Africa's trade talks. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda. Perhaps it's important to say that our work on trade policy flows from the industrial policy framework. We said quite clearly in the industrial policy framework that our trade policy needed to be informed by our industrial policy objectives. And this is work that is already underway, as I did make reference to the fact that there's a comprehensive trade policy review that is currently underway. And there are different elements to this work. Part of it is to achieve a simplification, for example, of our tariff book, so that we can have a much more simple, streamlined tariff book. That's an aspect of this work. The other aspect of this work is, of course, in the identified areas, sectors, chemicals, I mentioned, clothing, textiles, aluminium. Previously, we've done so on steel, to review the tariffs in those particular areas. So that we can take a view on those particular tariffs, given the priority that those particular sectors enjoy in terms of our industrial policy work. I think that generally, an important aspect of the work that we have to do as we undertake work on industrial development is to generally address the question of reducing input costs. And so, in that particular regard, where really you may be retaining tariffs that may be totally unnecessary, that may be serving no purpose, we'll duly eliminate those. And we do that on an ongoing basis. I deal with such submissions almost every month, where there are tariffs that are really serving no purpose except just to add costs. So there is that work, and I will invite Rob, I mean, to speak to that work, but that is work that is ongoing anyway. But of course, this is work that we undertake, bearing in mind also what we expect to come out of the Doha, or what we expected to come out of the Doha the round of negotiations. Let me say that in regard to the Doha round of negotiations that we had recently, that meeting, as you know, did not achieve a result. And we have a particular perspective, really, about this recent meeting that we held. The one is that the fact that the meeting failed to achieve a result on a matter that involves agriculture confirms the view that we still strongly hold, which is a view that was outlined when the Doha Development Agenda was agreed, that agriculture is at the center of resolving the issues of global trade and establishing a fair rules-based global trading system. And that to address the developmental challenges that face the world today, resolving the issues around agriculture is one of the key elements in that. And so the fact that the breakdown happened around the matter of agriculture, it confirms, because there has been an attempt in our view to shift the focus away from agriculture towards non-agriculture and market access. And in a sense, to put agriculture and NAMA on the same scale, and we have not shared that view, that these things are actually on the same scale. And secondly, we have a view that the breakdown also happens because there isn't a commonality of interpretation and translation of the meaning of achieving developmental outcomes from this round. And also the meaning of developed countries having to undertake more commitments than developing countries have to. We've witnessed, in our view, quite an aggressive approach by the developed countries towards those developing countries that are supposed to undertake commitments in terms of non-agricultural market access. That is about 30 or so developing countries in the world. We are included in that. Probably the only, or perhaps one of two African countries that would undertake commitments. Egypt is the other one. But it includes a lot of your Southeast Asian countries, including your Brazil, your Argentina, and so on. We've had quite an aggressive approach in terms of us opening up our markets to the industrial products from the developed countries. And we don't disagree with that. We accept that. But the extent to which we saw them really seeking to achieve that market opening, in certain instances, in our view, meant actually that you would not achieve that important objective of developed countries doing more than developing countries are supposed to do, and less than full reciprocity in terms of the commitments undertaken by developed and developing countries. So that's part of the reason, in our view, for that breakdown. I think the third perspective that we have around this is that part of the problem that we experienced in this particular round was an attempt really to adopt very rigid approaches when dealing with issues that relate to developing countries. As an example of this, if you were to examine the agriculture text, you would see that that agriculture text is very complex. And the reason that agriculture text is complex is because they sought to accommodate the needs and the concerns and the difficulties of the developed countries in the area of agriculture. And the same approach was not being adopted when it comes to non-agricultural market access. They wanted a highly rigid and highly streamlined approach, which does not allow sufficient flexibilities for developing countries to also deal with their difficulties and to meet their needs. So these are some of the things that we feel explain the breakdown. But chiefly, I think it's the fact that this round, the success of this round, still revolves around resolving the issues of agriculture. And secondly, it is when once we have a proper interpretation of developmental outcomes, what it means to achieve developmental outcomes, and ensuring that the commitments undertaken by developed and developing countries has a proportionality in line with the objective of achieving developmental outcomes from this round. And as South Africa, I think our big concern in these negotiations, partly it was the fact that there was a very aggressive intent for us to undertake an aggressive cutting of tariffs in our industrial products. And we drew to the attention of the members, you know, that South Africa actually had already undertaken quite significant commitments in the Uruguay round. In fact, it undertook commitments of a developed country. And therefore, our tariff structure as it looks today is quite different from even most of the developing countries. And therefore, we needed a recognition of that. And to some degree, there was a recognition of that, but we felt it was not sufficient. Secondly, our big problem was that there were not sufficient flexibilities in what was being proposed to allow us to deal with our difficult areas, clothing, textiles, footwear, among others. So we're fighting for greater flexibility in that regard. Of course, we had other difficulties that the developed countries, you know, introduced some new things to us just close to this meeting, something called anti-concentration. So that where you take advantage of the flexibility being provided, to say you could exclude a certain percentage of your tariff lines, or only affect 50% of the cuts that are required by the formula. But you can, however, not exclude entire chapter. We had a problem with that, because we actually would like to exclude the entire clothing, textile, and footwear chapter. Those three chapters were chapters to us that we felt, you know, we couldn't give away that easily because of the way that we are challenged in those particular areas. So these are just some of the priorities and concerns that we have in this particular meeting. I think that our work, therefore, just going back to your initial question, our work on trade policy continues. At this point, I'd like to invite Ross to say something.
Thanks. Linda asked where we go from here. Just let me add one statistic to just back up what the Minister said. At the coefficient of 22, which was proposed for South Africa and among other countries, what would have happened would have been that 23% of our tariff lines would have taken a cut of 30% or more at applied rates after applying the flexibilities that were available. So we were in for some fairly heavy tariff cuts had the arrangement gone through, and we were seeking to cushion some of this effect by asking for additional flexibility. But Linda says, where to from here? Well, I think first of all, in terms of the multilateral system, it's kind of anybody's guess when the ball will be picked up again, but probably not until the middle of next year or so at the earliest. How will this ball be picked up? Well, there's a huge debate about that. Some attempts to preserve some things that have been, some work that's been done, but also I think there's a recognition that since the countries that produced the so-called package did not agree among themselves, the package cannot be the basis of carrying on with the work in some sort of unchanged manner. So I think that how this ball is picked up and when it's picked up remain to be seen. But as the Minister said, in the meantime, we continue with our work, and I think one of the priorities of our work, and this was also the very aggressive commercial demands that were put on developing countries by developed countries, were very much predicated on the realization that the dynamic industrial markets of the world are no longer found in the advanced industrialized countries, but actually in the so-called countries of the global south, China, India, Brazil, and others. Now, these countries are currently accounting for about 37% of world trade and are poised to reach about 50% of world trade in the near future. And about half of that trade is south-south trade. It's this that is propelling minerals booms at high prices of minerals products, which is partly shielding developing countries, other developing countries, including our own, from the full force of the financial crisis in the United States and so on. So
So in terms of the direction of trade, one of our very important priorities, which we've sketched out before, but which we need to pursue energetically, is the development of our trading relations with the dynamic economies of the Global South. We have an ongoing program of work which we're looking to develop a program of growth and development with China. We have the IPSA relationship, India, Brazil, South Africa. There is a negotiations for a preferential trade agreement with Mercosur have been completed. There's negotiations with India and so on. I think these are very, very important priorities for us to move with as we go ahead. In addition to that, there's also the regional integration agenda, which will be further discussed, and an important step will be taken, as we've already indicated, in the SADC summit later on this week. Regional integration, developing the African agenda, and so on. And then I think this is the sort of basis on which we try to work for a more equitable set of relationships and bilateral discussions with some of the developed countries, and we face things like challenges that we're facing with the economic partnership agreement negotiations with the EU and so on. So I think that the truth is that for the moment the multilateral system is being weakened. It was weakened, as the minister said, because the balance between development and commercial interests of the advanced industrialized countries was not right, in our view. The commercial interests of the rich were put on a par and sometimes trumped the developmental needs of developing countries. This was fundamentally the imbalance that could have cropped up in any one of several issues. It had cropped up in a small technical trade remedy called special safeguard measures, but it could have cropped up in any one of several other issues along the way. But the multilateral system is currently weakened, but I've no doubt that at some point the multilateral negotiations will be picked up again in some form, but probably not in the very, very near future. Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, thanks very much. I think we can conclude unless there's something there. So on both sides, thanks very much. Thanks to the nurse and the team. Thank you very much.
Thank you.